Start recording. Good afternoon. Good morning for some of you. I know about, yeah. I'm guessing most of you have classes before this. No?
Yes.
Yes. Some of you saw me earlier. Still asleep. Okay, before I start talking about things, how are things going with the project? Are you all, you've got your partners, you've got your, people, you've got an idea of what you want to do, now you're starting to put together, you've got a proposal that you're supposed to get in by Thursday.
Are you going to expand on what that will entail?
It's on the wiki. It's basically a paragraph and a list of milestones, of which we've given you half the milestones, you had to come up with like four. So.
Is that due for everybody on Friday, or just the Friday
tutorial? No, everyone. Okay. It's due at the same time. Due before the tutorial.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, you should have your thing. Basically, you should get it done before tutorial, because you should now be getting to work on building your thing. So rough. So. So there's various pieces I can help you with and various pieces that you need to work on your own. So tell me what sort of things you're running into difficulties with. Yeah?
I was going to ask you this during your office hours today, but I'm not quite sure, because I'm still stuck in this, the web is for serving documents. So I'm thinking I have my JavaScript that I want to run, and I have Node, and I have to give the browser an HTML page and my JavaScript, and then it can run it. But then I'm just statically serving files.
Ideally, your JavaScript would send requests back to Node.
So I'm not sure that's where I'm stuck.
Well, again, we haven't talked about client-side JavaScript, really. And we'll get into that later on, and you'll see pieces of it. But for the client-side JavaScript, that normally is for... depending on the nature of your app. Sometimes that's most of what you're doing. Sometimes that's just to make the interface a bit more interactive to talk to the server side. Either way, you're there talking about JavaScript interacting with the browser. Now, on the server side, you're running a program which is sending out HTML and JavaScript to the client. How do you do that? You're running Node. How do you get Node to send this? You had a basic thing. You have this, you can create an HTTP server, and you've already seen how to send static files very simply. If you use, I would suggest using the Express framework, which I will explain in more detail as the term goes on, but you can see the basic things. You have an example of it basically working. You can stick code in there and do that. So the idea of doing all of this in the context of a Node application is that you are creating, you're filling in templates. You have some template of the basic architecture of what your pages are going to look like, and then you programmatically insert stuff into it. That's what stuff like Jade helps you do. CSS is for making it look pretty. Yep.
Is it okay to envision it as basically, like, for a desktop, you would code an app that, there's an executable, you run it, it has presentation layer, logic, and storage and whatnot, and basically, with Node, you have the presentation is through the browser, the logic is within the Node application, and the data is, again, the Node application.
The presentation is definitely in the browser.
Right.
The logic
can be
spread between the two.
But
so.
In a sense, instead of just to echo the serving up static documents model, instead of having a web server that serves up static files that might do something on the browser side, you're actually just writing an app that is in itself both the web server and whatever logic.
Right.
Kind of combined.
So traditionally, for making a dynamic website, you would use something like Apache, which is designed for serving static files, and then you would use some sort of extension to it, like PHP, where you'd say, okay, for documents that are of this type, consider it a script for this plugin. Run this through PHP. PHP will give you the right output and send it out, but otherwise you're doing other stuff. With Node, you're just running the Node environment. And inside of it, you're supposed to do everything. And so if you want to have something take care of the business of how do I serve up static web pages, you use other code. So for example, if you want something that's a more than a bare bones website web server, you use something like Connect. That's a bit of middleware. If you want something that then provides you a nice framework for building a more elaborate website, you have Express. Express is built on top of Connect. That's why I gave you these examples earlier on, because saying that, okay, here it is. This is something that can serve, you know, static website. Plug in your stuff and make it do stuff. Now, will you understand how everything works? No, but honestly, the beautiful thing about the web is you can cobble things together without understanding how everything works. Until it breaks. And then you'll come across bugs. And so what I'm trying to do with lectures is lead you through the conceptual foundations of various pieces. Right now I'm going through JavaScript, but if there are particular areas of concepts that you are going like, wow, I'm trying to figure this out and I just don't know what's going on, let me know. This is the first time I'm teaching this class. The exact order of topics is, I'm not sure exactly what's the right thing. I'm thinking that understanding the fundamentals of JavaScript kind of comes first, and then I was going to talk about some of the frameworks, and then talk about kind of the back-end store and stuff, but it's a work in progress, because I'm basing it partially on how you all respond to this. So, if you're, but I'm expecting you all now to be actively trying to build things. And looking at, because there's basically two books you should be looking at that makes these. JavaScript The Good Parts is a great book, or you can use whatever other JavaScript tutorial you want. I'd suggest JavaScript The Good Parts because I'm following that pretty closely in terms of understanding JavaScript. Read through that to understand things, and then when you don't understand things, you should be coming here and asking about them. And then for learning Node, there's the Learning Node book, or there's other stuff for Node. The nice thing with the book I pointed you to is that it has a lot of stuff on Connect and Express for building stuff. So go out there and do stuff. I've given you an example for it, and now you can do that. Because I could, with a class like this, it's a little funny because you all come in here with a good amount of programming experience. Varying amount of programming experience, but still, at the very minimum, you've had three other programming classes before this. So the basic code bits you should be able to do. And you now are trying to put together an application you want to put together. And there's tons of stuff out there for web technologies, which can make it arbitrarily easy to do lots and lots of things. The hard part is putting it all together to find the right pieces and making them all mesh together. And so I'm not kind of saying, do this, do this, do this, do this, do this. I'm saying, you go do stuff, and I will supply, when you come across problems, I will try supplying you with what you need to get past those humps. But that requires you to be active. And that's part of the idea behind the milestones, is that you all should be actively working on your stuff. And so the TAs will be able to say, oh, look, these people aren't doing stuff. They're running into these difficulties. So talk with your TAs. They should be able to help you directly. And if you're having bigger problems, then we can talk about it in class and stuff. But you should be getting stuff running. Yes? Okay. So the key thing with no SQL type stores is they're fundamentally about performance. They're about making really big applications. So in the context of this class, you don't really need to. I'm going to talk about no SQL later on, but you don't need to use no SQL. There's no reason to it. Anything you can do with NoSQL, you can do with the relational database. So you might as well use, you know, one of those layers. Now, what you might want, now, I see this MongoDB seems is pretty good for doing, you know, it's very flexible. That's a good place to start. In terms of talking about the details of how you do this, I'm going to talk about that later in the semester to give you some more conceptual foundations. But you should abstract your application, so changing out the back-end store shouldn't be a big deal. And you should, but you should figure out what sort of semantics you need. That's what.
Yeah, the schema. I mean, but even the schema, I mean, the database
database. Well, again, you should have it so that that's all encapsulated in certain objects in your application, the store that you want, right? Right. And that's a pretty standard one to use with Node applications. So, use that unless you run across some problem.
Here, but there is no express requirement to use a database for our project, though, is there?
You need some sort of back-end store.
It could be a TXT, I guess.
I encourage you to use some sort of persistent store like MongoDB. I really don't want to see you kind of try to do things with files fundamentally, because it's going to cause you problems. Because actually what you'll end up doing is engineering a lot of concurrency into it. You'll run into race conditions and things if you try doing it yourself, and it's better not to go there. You think it might be simpler with just do a file, but it's better just to use one of these things.
I guess you're getting into performance things, because if it's just me poking around at some sort of an API mashup and it actually pulls the data every time, that's fine. But
well, I'm thinking at the bare minimum, you should have like configuration type things stored. You know, persistent. You know, here's my login. Here's my. You know, that's what I'm hoping for you to have.
I've had the sentiment expressed to me that some of the students would like that, not necessarily as assignments, but just small example programs that they could write to demonstrate what they should be learning. Mm. So instead of just copy-pasting these blog examples, something they would actually need to figure out how to do so that they could learn the language.
Okay. So basically some little puzzles for learning bits of the language?
That would be good.
Would those be like the actual milestones that like some of the milestones?
Well, no, because that's your app. This is just some random little sample programs to try and figure out how to...
Well, I'll talk with the TAs and see what we can put together in terms of that. I mean, the reason why I've been hesitant about that, well, I didn't want to make assignments specifically because, first of all, because of the wide range of everyone, and also because... Well, I'm trying something a little different really with this course, because it seems that people are more motivated to work on things that you're trying to build, as opposed to just doing some random thing. Now, if you want, I'm happy to say, okay, here's to learn this concept, here's some examples, here's some questions and stuff. Yes?
So my problem right now is, from what we've been doing, great, I can write JavaScript, but we're not trying to make JavaScript programs. So I think it would be more useful.
What do you mean you're not making JavaScript programs?
We're working with, I'm thinking I can make a script.js file and I could run it in some HTML, but I can't do an app that's like what we're trying to make, because we need, I think we should start with Node. Node is JS, but we haven't talked at all about Node.
Node specifically as a thing. Well,
as how to use Node to run my JS.
But that's what we did in the tutorials, right? With those, with the first couple of. Okay, so I mean, because I'm happy to answer specific questions that you try to make things work through the tutorials and like things didn't make sense.
When I read the tutorial, I don't even know where to start reading it, right? Because I'm only used to C and C++ and Java type languages where I'll look for a main and I'll follow. So here I just start reading files and I'm lost.
Okay, hold on. Here.
Two things. One, if you go on Node.js, there is a link to a video by the guy who wrote it.
Okay.
It's an hour long. It actually gives you a really good idea of the thinking that he put behind it.
Okay. Because
it's an event loop and it's different than a main.
Okay.
And, like, that actually cleared up some of the stuff.
Okay, so, yeah, this is certainly stuff I've been, like, it's like learning the language and then going to Node. This is part of the problem. It's like, if I just walk, one way, a strategy is I could walk you through each of the little bits of technology by the nose and say, here's this, here's this, here's this, here's this. By the end of the class, we would have one example application.
Right.
You know? I mean, basically, I'm sure I would bore most of you to tears, and I'm sure half of you would probably just kind of copy a lot of things because of the path of least resistance, and then say, okay, here it is, and you might learn a few things, and you just won't get much out of it. And I'm trying to treat you like developers, that you're going off and trying to list, but I'm here to help you develop.
Something that might be useful is the sort of thing that was mentioned is, every week we have a little, like, write something that does X and then post the solution like at the end of the week, because that might give, it's not going to be an assignment in that we're on the hook to do this and then we're marked on it. The focus is still on the apps we're building, but that might help to guide a little bit to go through things like, how do you do persistent storage? How do you do client-side to server-side interaction?
This is basically what I'm planning on going through, you know, in later lectures. We're right now kind of still covering fundamentals of kind of the semantics of things. But yeah, my plan is to kind of say, here are some code examples. Here's how this piece works. Here's how this piece works. And I'm hoping that you all may have, like, cobbled some bit together and you go like, oh, that's how you do it. And then now you can fix this part of your code. Now you can adjust this part. Now you can add this feature you wanted to. But the key thing there is you'll have come up with the question beforehand. By trying to build this, you'll go like, how the heck do I do that? And then when I show you, you'll go, oh, that's why that's useful.
I think it's the range of questions that's probably confusing some people, because it's literally a universe of things you could do. And
right. That's true. I grant you that. I have to admit, part of your unease is deliberate.
I like to watch a squirm.
Because it's fundamental to an active development area like the web. The technologies come fast and furious. To this year, this thing's hot. Next year, this thing's hot. Next year, this thing's hot. Part of the skill I want you all to have when you leave undergrad here is not to have learned the things, particular things we taught, but to be have the confidence to say, someone throws something at you, go like, whatever. I'll go study it for a couple of days, a week or something, and I'll have a basic idea. I'll use it for a month and I'll master it. You know, that's what you should leave an undergrad in CS with, is that you shouldn't be intimidated by any technology that's thrown at you. You should have enough of a grasp of fundamentals and enough confidence for facing those things to do that. But the only way I know how to do that is for you to deal with that situation. If I break everything down really easily for you, you're not going to do that. And so fundamentally, this class is about, you're in a technology ocean. How do you make sense of it? And you got to swim. And yes, sink or swim, but I'm here. I've got life preservers. I've got lots of them. I'm happy to toss them out, but you gotta ask. You've gotta tell me. Okay, now, what do you need? What do you need to help me here? What do you need to help you here? You know, as opposed to me just kind of making it all easy. You'll never learn to swim. Yes.
To be fair, in the real world, they rarely say make anything you want using this thing that I decided that you've never heard of.
Yeah, but well, no,
actually, no pre-existing code base.
No, but actually it's much worse than that. What you do is you start a job, you say, oh, here's a million lines of code. It's written in these five frameworks that are custom built that you've never heard of before. You need to start fixing bugs yesterday.
And we don't like this framework anymore.
And you hate this thing. You know, it's like, it's just, that's what you get in the real world. It's much worse.
Well, it's easier to figure out what's going on.
No, 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 because notice here, you don't have to deal with legacy code. You just have to deal with frameworks. And the frameworks, you get to pick the ones you like. You get to pick the ones like, oh, I like that one. It's got nice examples. Oh, it's like easy to follow. I'll use that. And then you build it out there. Oh, I like this one. Oh, look, here's an example application. It looks great. You know, that looks really cool. I can just modify that and build my application. You can do that. I mean, that's because I know that's, I know all of you are good at finding things. One way or the other. Yes. Well, not just Google, your friends, you know, through maybe by, you know, looking at various forums and stuff, you can find stuff. Take advantage of all those resources. That's what you should be doing, as opposed to me saying, don't use anything. Use everything. Give credit. But you can use whatever you want. There's videos, there's, I mean, you need to go out there and actively figure out what do you not, you know, what are the things you want, and then go out and learn. But yes, this is much easier than saying, okay, here's, because if you've ever tried looking at a really big code base and tried revert, you know, figuring out what happens and then figure out the abstractions in it and other things, pain, pain, pain. Figuring out the web is easier, but it's not easy. There's definitely work here. I mean, just that example application I gave you has a lot of magic in it.
Insert wizardry here.
Insert wizardry here, you know? But that's code. That's code. Having lots of functionality in these things going, how is that working? And how do you deal with it? You take that piece and you go like, I think it works this way. Well, let me poke it. Let me put this in. Let me try it this way. Let me try using it in this context. Let me, you know, slice and dice it. Oh, and you try it, it's like, oh, that broke badly. Oops. Let me try it some other way. And as this way, you come to understand what that code does. That's what I want you all to be doing. You know, and web technology is the best place to do it because there is so much stuff out there. That's what everyone does. The core documentation for any piece of this technology is okay. It's not perfect. Because it keeps changing. Even if the documentation was great for one version, they changed it. So, but each time they change it, they typically make it better. Go figure. So it's not, I make it so that the midterm and final should be very doable because it will be based on the questions you get in class. And we'll talk about the concepts and you'll have, you know, you'll have some understanding. Then, with your project, you'll have to build something that works, that does something. But you notice the requirements are not very high. I have not said you have to build this very elaborate, very specific thing. You got to build me something that looks like a web app, that's got this here, and uses these basic technologies. That's it. You can make this as easy as you want for yourselves. Just about. Or you can make this very, very hard for yourself, depending on what you decide to set yourself up to do. You may recalibrate as the term goes on.
Okay, that's another thing. Is our proposal that we give Mark and Stone?
We are not doing the waterfall model. Any notion of software engineering where you start with a fixed spec and you implement exactly to that spec? No. That never happens. Well, it does happen in some places, but really it's more of a lie. What they typically do is they say they're going to write to a specific spec, they try writing it, they realize, oops, you know, we made a mistake, so they change the spec. Unless you're like in a mil spec environment.
For our, say we're using a relational database, for our user identification, should we be using cookies or just
bucket systems.
Yes. So yeah, we will discuss authentication as you go on. Later on. I'm not talking about that just yet, but certainly we will talk about authentication and what it means, to maintain a session. But the basic idea is, for now, what you really have to do is, when a request comes to the server, how does it know what the state of the application should be? If you set a cookie, then you have an identifier that you can use to say, oh, this is where we are. Because think about it, it's not just one individual accessing your web app. It could be 20. How do you tell them apart? That's why you give them a cookie. You could also do it with weird URLs.
In the meantime, while we're waiting for that lecture,
mm-hmm.
is there somewhere we should be looking for information on that particular aspect of our project that you can think of right now?
I don't have a specific pointer for that. For now, you can encapsulate it. You shouldn't need to. Well, all you need to do is just make it so that every user for now just accesses it by a unique URL. That's the way you fake it for now. And when you go to a cookie, then you have a general URL plus the cookie. So for now, you can do something. Do something like that. The thing is, all these frameworks include things like cookie handling. That's what's nice, is they give this stuff to you for free. But, okay. Let me see if I can talk about this JavaScript stuff quickly, and then maybe I can talk a bit about sessions. Because that is kind of a fundamental thing to talk about. So, The piece of JavaScript now I want to talk about was, how do you call functions? There's these, if you look in JavaScript, the good part, there's four invocation paradigms. Or patterns, I think there's. Yeah, invocation patterns. So,
method.
Okay, method, constructor. Function and apply. The things I meant to get to last week kept getting put off, so I think we've gotten to where we can discuss this. So, the thing that distinguishes these methods is this. How this is set. So let's start with the method one. So if you start with a function, so let's say we have an object foo, and it has a method m. We can call the method by just saying, here's the method, and then just giving it a1, a2, two arguments, we call them. Yes?
Can you say foo has a method m? Does that mean it has a property that instead of a value has code in it?
Exactly. Yes. That's the whole thing about it. It's just us. These are just properties. So the properties could refer to numbers. Properties could be functions. Doesn't matter. It happens to have a function. You can do this. If this is not a function and you try doing this, it will give you a runtime error saying, you're trying to invoke an integer as a function and it's not.
That was my question.
Yes. But you'll only get an error at runtime. You won't get an error, and we'll talk about how that happened, an exceptional.
And it probably won't be very helpful.
Yeah. so we call this method foo. So in this context, what does this refer to? Foo. Because remember, this is supposed to be a method invocation. If you're doing a method, a method is for modifying an object. If you're in the function, how does it know what object it is a method of? This is how it knows. Because it could have been any function. Remember, we can put these functions here and everywhere. And it's just, this is how you provide its context. The function refers to this, and this is food. Simple, mostly straightforward. I'm gonna skip this one for a second. That's the annoying one. That's the one, basically, I would actually say you should avoid. But,
Yeah.
It's standard Java. This is where I do agree with. I'll rant about that in a second.
It's not one of the good parts.
No, it is a good part. The syntax is weird, but it works fine.
The new?
Yeah, it's fine.
I'll explain what's wrong with it. So, how do you do private stuff? Yes, you have to kind of go through this elaborate thing. Instead, you just use a function and just have to return it out. And set up everything. And besides,
private stuff.
Who needs private
stuff?
Okay. Anyway.
JavaScript
and
everything
down. Yeah. So, the function is just say, we can just call, now, M is a function. Let's say over here we say, let's say M equals dot M. So now we've just created a, so in the global namespace we've got an M. Now let's call M of A1, A2. What's this?
Undefined.
No.
Wait, it's like undefined or global object?
Global object. Basically, what this means is, this is not useful. This is basically, you don't access, in this context, when you call it a function, this is never what you want it to be.
Hmm? Now, when you do m equals foo.m, that is not a shortcut to foo.m. That's actually m being assigned whatever the property value is.
This is in the global context. It's just
so foo.m changes m. So foo.m is actually syntactic sugar. It's calling m dot call and then passing in foo.
You're still affecting the school object when you call that.
No. Unless in this model here, the M does not necessarily have any reference to foo. It doesn't know it intrinsically. It couldn't be just so this generic method, generic function. And all it does, it uses this symbol inside of it in order to access the object. So you can call it outside of the context of an object, and then it will just get this default object to do so. And that's almost never what you want to access. So, you could try to have your function check to see whether it's getting, whether this makes sense or not, but you just have to keep this in mind. If something is designed to work as a method, it will run outside of the context of a method, but it will be a method, it'll implicitly be a method of just the default object.
It's a post object.
Post object. Okay, beautiful. Okay. So, yes?
Is M a deep copy of foo.m or a shallow?
Shallowest as possible. This is a reference.
Yeah.
This is the same reference. So they're both referring to the same function.
It's exactly like Java.
Yeah.
Except for you extract it from the context where it was first defined.
Well, the whole thing is the context is determined at runtime.
Right.
By the invocation. That's why I'm saying the invocation matters in what this is bound to.
So if M only has one line, and it's this dot A equals 6, then foo foo.m will set foo.a, otherwise you'll just have a global A.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So, so see, this is the whole thing, like in a language like Java, if you want to refer to your own object, it's like the compiler knows. But here it's the runtime environment. These functions can be put in any sort of context, and so this is a more fluid concept. So the function invocation pattern is, so what we do in the function invocation pattern is like, so normally you'd say, well, why is this important? Well, we use this sort of invocation with nested functions. So let's say this is in the context of another function like, we'll tell a function here. So inside this context here, now we're defining a helper function inside of there. And now this function, we're calling this function inside of this. And so this M, we really want it to access this outer context. I mean, let's say we meant this to be a method. We want to access this outer context. How do we get that outer context? This is useless. The convention is that. This is where that comes in. You would say that equals this. And then the other functions will use that.
Are you making up that, or is that actually?
It's a convention.
Okay, it's not actually.
I've seen self use more.
You've seen self use more? Okay. Self can also be used. I mean, it's saying you have to have some other thing that refers to the current object instead of this.
Okay.
Oh, that's not.
That is
that means that isn't a default. You have to actually write.
No, yeah,
that's
come up with a pseudonym for this.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I thought it was more magic.
No, it's not magic at all. It's just, so all it's saying is that if you want
this
to use this, if you want other functions, so you have this function here. You have f, you have a function here.
This is an example.
And then you have a function g that is doing stuff here. And let's say f is called, this is called as a method. If f is called as a method, then this has a sane value. It's an object you want to mess with. And so, but what would be nice is if this would be carried over to this to the context here. So now you can find this helper function and then you call g here. You give it some arguments. So you define a function, you call the function. It'd be nice if this function here had the same this as its outer function. But instead, the this here will default to the global one.
In all cases?
Yes. Because you called it without any qualifiers.
So if you say this dot g.
What?
If you say this dot g.
You could. Yeah. But no, but the problem is then, the reason why you don't want to do that is because then you'd have to define G as part of this, and then it becomes public. The nice thing here is this function G is private. It cannot be accessed by anyone outside of the object. This is how you do private methods. But basically, private methods in JavaScript have don't have the right this value. So you have to use some other symbol to do that. And at the beginning of your function, at the beginning of your public function, you save this to some other value, and then you use it in all your private ones. Yes?
Over there in that one, I don't think M would work, because if M is just a method of foo, then M would be using this to refer to a
No, so what I'm saying is the method, when we say a function is a method or not, that is a product of how it is called in JavaScript. It has nothing to do with how it's defined.
I know, but well, like, for example, in M, uh-huh. refer to a variable, you say this dot whatever. But now this is still the global object, you have to say at dot whatever instead.
Assuming that someone else has in the outer context defined that.
Yeah.
Right. No. Exactly. Exactly. This M, if it, this M refers to this,
yeah.
doing this whole thing. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. You have this when you're running private methods. You'll have to refer. You can't refer to this.
Okay. Yeah, so
you have to refer to something else.
To make a new function that uses that.
Exactly.
Instead of using
the same. Yeah. Exactly. So it's a glitch. It's an easy to work around glitch, but it's a glitch. Because really, it'd be nice if when you're in this context, once you define this to be something, it stays defined. But it isn't. It gets undefined and back to some global defaults. Yes?
So if you have an object where the property that is the function, say M,
uh-huh.
and within the code of M, you have a this reference, then that just goes to the object. However, if you wanted to use
a helper
that,
function.
That function elsewhere,
mm-hmm.
you probably would.
That this will. The,
you
yeah.
would use this, you would use that.
So if you want to use a function in other contexts, this is where the apply one comes in. The apply, when you apply a function. So.
Right,
what?
And call.
And call?
Yeah, well, it's the difference is.
So apply, you give it, so you give it the, so you say f dot apply, it's f dot apply, then, and then, yeah, it's, yeah, so you apply a function to the function, and then you say the, you what with the this value, and then args. And the args is an array, isn't it, with apply? I remember apply this as an array.
Okay, okay, so that's probably the other way.
Yeah, call. Yeah, okay.
And call you give it the arguments.
Give the arguments. Okay, that sounds right. But so yeah, but this is the very functional way of doing it. So now you have a function. And you want to call this function with a specific this.
Okay.
You want to specify this. So here, you tell it this is the this you should use. And here are the other arguments you should give it. And the arguments are just stored in an array. So,
F is the name of the function.
Yeah. You want to call F. And then you give it a, tell it to apply it to this. So this is a classic functional programming thing. You have a function, you have a set of arguments, you're applying the function to the arguments. And in the context of JavaScript, to apply a function to the arguments, there's always the explicit arguments, and then there's the implicit argument of this. And so here, it's all there. That's all. So if you have a function that assumes things about this, you can call it this way. Yes?
So if you wrote a function that was intended to be a method, if you want to use it elsewhere, you would use apply to call it. Specify context. If you wrote a function that was a helper function, then instead of this, you just use that, assuming.
Yeah, use some convention,
right.
That or self or something, but some other thing because you don't trust this.
Or you could just always use this and apply it.
Yes, but
so
that syntactically gets in
there. The reason you use that pattern is when you don't get to decide when the function gets called, like an event.
Yeah, when you can't control. Yeah, yeah, when you can't control the context. Yes. Yeah, well, if you want to get the same behavior as this comes as a method,
yes.
You would call this as, you'd say, M here, apply, foo, and then an array with A1 and A2.
So you can just explicitly
Exactly.
And method and function are syntactic sugar that put magic values for this.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. When I say JavaScript is functional, pretending to be object-oriented, it really is, because all the object-oriented operations are implemented in weird functional ways.
That's the same way C++ works deep under the hood, right? It passes the polyfunction.
C++ doesn't really have closures.
Oh, yeah, okay, but I mean just passing the this pointer.
Yes, kind of. It's all static. Since it's all static, this is all very dynamic. You can just change this on the fly. You can change the object definitions on the fly. You can add a method. There are no classes. So now the constructor. So the whole constructor method is saying, let's make this look like C++. Okay, and the idea there is, you want to construct a new function. You want to construct a new object. You take the object prototype, which is defined by the prototype thing. You call its constructor function, and that returns. And the convention there is this is set to the new object that has been created. So now this is the object you are to populate.
So why is that
then?
Hmm?
So it's not it's a little convoluted, and it makes you think you're using classes when you're not. because all you have to, and the other thing is that by doing the new, you can't get any private things. When you're adding properties to it, you're only adding public properties. So it's all everything you, that new object you create, everything you put into it's going to be public. If you want any sort of data hiding, it's not, you can't do it that way. Or you can, but you have to kind of...
You have to put all the private methods in the structure.
Yeah. That works. But the fact is, you can do it. The really bad thing about constructors is that what if you call a constructor without calling new? So the constructor paradigm is basically you're saying a function, you say new foo.
Well, right.
But this is because, so this is the function you want to, so this is the function of the object. Yeah, this is the constructor function. So whatever, we're treating this like a class. Here. And so we want a new instance of foo. And so to do this, this will use foo's constructor method to generate it. And this will be bound to the new object that is generated as part of this. And the constructor can do whatever it wants with this new object. The problem is, you could call this function without the new. What happens if you call it without the new? This is global, yeah. Yeah.
Construct the global object.
You're trying to construct a global object. Things get weird really fast.
Like weird doesn't break.
Huh? What?
Weird doesn't break.
You won't get any errors.
Oh, but
it's just that semantically, what the heck are you doing? Yes? If you do strict, then this will then it doesn't bound to the global object; it gets undefined. Yeah, but still, yeah. Okay, so I guess that helps you out some. Yeah, but basically, this is the problem with new: is you can still call the functions without it. You can't get anything private. You have to go through this prototype constructor function thing, where instead you can just have an object that produces your new objects and will set things up appropriately. There's no need for new. That I think that's really, as a language design thing, having the new construct adds indirection that doesn't really buy you much, except it kind of looks like something that other people are used to, but does it in an alien way. Yes? How would you define a constructor?
Yeah.
Okay, so you have a constructor. So let's okay, so we'll say something like, let's try to think of box or something. Okay, so box is a function. So we'll say it will have an S, the size. So you want to return this, so we want to return, so what do we want to return for this? We want to return an object. And the object should have certain methods. So if this is called in the correct context, this is pointing to the new object. So all we have to do is say this dot, if we want to just make it as a method, we say this dot s equals s. Oh, and the other thing is we don't have to return this. We don't have to return anything because, you know, this is the object. So you don't normally have a return value on these. On constructors. On constructor methods. Because it's assumed there. So, here. I've constructed it. Now, if I wanted it, now this has no methods. So if I wanted a method M for this, I would then say, you know, this dot M equals what, huh?
You don't have to do that in the constructor.
You can just define the function. You don't have to say explicitly.
Below the constructor, we just write box.prototype.m equal function. And then every time you instantiate a box, it will have that.
Oh, right. Yeah, you don't have to do it inside here. You can do it outside.
Theoretically,
save
time.
Yeah. I'm yeah, but I guess that's, I mean, it's, if it's a, well, the reason why you would do it this way is if you wanted this function to have different state every time. Like right now it's going to get that state if it refers to, if this method gets called, when it refers to this, it can say this.s. And this will get this.
And that will also have to be defined.
But if we got rid of this, but what we, if with this function, we can get rid of this. This is how you have private stuff. Now, M can access S here. S is defined inside this function. It's not defined anywhere else. So by putting this in the constructor, you can do some private stuff here. But again, we didn't really need this whole new thing if we want to start doing stuff like this. Yes? Exactly. So that's what I'm saying. This defines a new anonymous function here with a separate closure, with its own state, with its own pointers to state, and that's why it gets its own S. So the next time, every time we call box, we logically get a new function with a new context with a new S. And that's how you get private stuff. But you see, you don't actually have to have the new stuff. You just have to have something that returns, basically all the new stuff has is a little bit of syntactic sugar for not having to set, not having to explicitly create an object inside of here, because otherwise you have to create an empty object and you don't have to return it. For this, the prototype would be object?
Yeah. So it's weird, because when you want to give it methods outside of here, you'd say box.prototype.m or whatever, but only boxes have that. But the way that you've written it, it sounds like you've added it to the object prototype. So I'm not clear what's happening there.
So here, this is not. I'm not adding this method to the object prototype here. Because prototypes are useful when you have a template. I mean, prototypes are separate from constructors. When you have a prototype, you're saying, I'm going to make a new object. I want the new object to be like this. So when you search for identifiers in this object, if it's not defined, go to the prototype. With a constructor, you're explicitly setting things. Now here, I could set prototype, this.prototype. And I've set what the prototype's going to be. And that will determine it. But now, anytime the object is called, my new box instance, B or whatever, is going to look for anything defined as part of the object. And if it's not found there, it'll look in the prototype.
Inside that function, you have access to this.
Which function?
M.
In this function, you have... No. it depends on how it's called. Remember, functions get access to this depending upon how they're called. So if you just called if we just called M inside of here, you wouldn't have access to it. If you call it outside of it, would say, you know, B dot M, yes it would. But
this dot M.
Yeah, here. But this is an object. I mean, then you're specifying it as you're doing a method invocation. If you do a, but that the reason why you have access to this is because you called it as this.m. So like here we could say this.m. And that would call it. So this. The setting of this is completely dependent upon how the function is called, the context in which it's called. It has nothing to do with the context in which the function is defined. The context in which the function is defined determines everything else about its lexical scope, all the other bindings. This is weird. This is binding changes depending on how it's called. It has useful things in some other time, certain places. Other times, it's just annoying. So, general rule of thumb: look at how you're calling the function. How you're calling the function, you should be able to determine what that function is going to get as a this value. And you should always implicitly think about what should if that function cares about this. You need to be aware of that. So basically, if it's just going to be a regular function, put everything in the parameters. If it's going to be something that's going to act as a method and act on a specific object, refer to this. It's fine. If you're making a helper function, make sure its context defines some other identifier like that to refer to the object it's supposed to be helping with. I'm not guessing this won't be completely crystal clear to most of you. but look at JavaScript, the good parts. Chapter 4, the functions, it goes through it very nicely. I'm trying to give you kind of the high-level things, and so hopefully when you look through it there, it will help get the pieces together. Yes?
That doesn't have to be that. It can be Bob.
It can be Bob.
Yeah.
Yes, that can be Bob. All I'm saying is that's convention. It could be self. Be anything you want.
Previous this.
Parent or something.
Previous this, yes. The main thing is that it's for private functions. So the fact that it's a convention doesn't matter because the nature of private functions is they're called only under controlled circumstances. You control when private functions are called. So you can determine what their context is. Okay, so I'm just going to look at these questions because we are getting through these questions today.
We got a couple already.
Yeah, so I've got, you know, so in the method invocation pattern, a function returns what value if there's no explicit return statement? So in the method.
I have no idea.
So if you have no idea, what do you think it is?
Undefined.
So normally functions, if you don't give an explicit return value, it returns undefined. Unless it's a constructor, it returns this. So in the constructor invocation, a function returns what value if there's no explicit return statement? This. In the function invocation pattern, this is bound to what object?
Say global.
Is it okay? Can I put this on the screen? Can be helpful?
Yeah.
Okay, I can just start. So you all have had 24-2, right?
Yes.
You've all had recursion, right?
Of course.
Yeah. Never do.
What?
Never do.
Never do. Unless you're walking the DOM. But walking T structures and doing recursion is just natural. You know, you want to do recursive descent. Why not? You only blow up the stack if the thing you're recursing over is insane.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah, so I'll get that. So,
if
the method invocation pattern, so this, you know, there's no explicit return statement. It's undefined because you haven't specified it. The only time it gets specified automatically for you is when you do a constructor. This in the function invocation, the weirdness of this is that this is bound to the global object. Otherwise, you know, this is normally bound to specific object. This is why you have to be careful. You have to watch out when you're using this. Make sure the function is called in the appropriate context. But of course, this is JavaScript, so functions can be called in all kinds of crazy contexts.
Could you check like if this equals capital object or that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can add defensive code like that. You know, or unless it's of a certain type where it has certain properties or something. I mean, rather than explicitly tell with this, you can say, does it have the things you want? Does it look like the kind of object you expect to look like?
Am I going to add stuff, or am I just going to change stuff that's on there?
Exactly. So there's an operation called has property. Has property lets you determine whether this belongs to this object or... It might be defined by some. If it's signed somewhere else on the time chain, it won't be. It will say no.
Could you not just check to see if it was undefined? I guess you could.
Read because that just tells you whether it's defined anywhere in the prototype chain.
Right.
Is it in this object or is it?
Global.
And has property only checks the current
object.
Oh, okay.
Has property lets you look for what's in this object as opposed to what it's inheriting from.
Okay.
Has own property. Thank you.
And there's also has property that could go.
I don't think there's a has
okay.
property. It's has own property. So
property would just be if.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It has own property. So the apply function invocation pattern does not allow you to set the value of this.
False.
That's false. It does. That's the whole point. That's part of the point. Yeah. The use of that is to get around the limitations of the function invocation pattern.
True.
Yep. Okay. So now, the exceptions. Java has try and catch, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. You've all learned that. It's.
Solid.
Yeah. Exactly. It's basically the same thing. Yeah. You, with JavaScript, it's just a you. When you're in an object, you have a problem, you can throw an exception. Then it'll be caught by an outer try catch statement. So try is the thing saying the code you want to try with, and the exceptions that are generated with it will be go to the catch statement. Now the key thing in JavaScript is the object is that the throw thing throws an object. And it's a JavaScript object. So there's going to be any kinds of stuff in it. You can put whatever you want in it. There's some conventions in it, but it's just, I mean, there's a few things like the name and stuff, but really it's whatever you want to. So you just get an object. You put whatever data you want into it, it's going to get passed to the catch statement.
Iterate through the global object properties, put them all in this object.
You could. Well, you don't have to iterate through them. They're all there because it's inherited. If that's the prototype, you know, So that all I was looking here is just realize that this, it makes, I find this kind of powerful because in most languages, when you do some sort of exception handling, you have these exception names, these identifiers, and then you have to map them to something else. Here, it's a whole object. Put whatever you want. You can put as much state to be passed around later. It just makes it very nice for encapsulation purposes. It makes error handling potentially very clean because you've got all that. Whatever you need is there, as opposed to saying, here's the name of the exception, and now there's some other thing that's storing it. I mean, like in C, you have an error number, and then there's something else with storing the codes. I mean, it's, yeah.
You could, like, throw this, just the entire state, and it would just like throw it out.
Yeah, I guess you could. Probably not what you want to do. But you could, it's an object. You could throw it. Yeah, sure.
Something went wrong.
Yeah, because remember, when we say an object, an int is an object, a string is an object.
An array of three numbers.
Is an object. So it all depends on what your catch statement wants to have.
Object.
It's an object. Because it's an object.
So three, one word is global?
Yeah, global. So current versions of... So tail recursion... Did you all talk about tail recursion?
Yes.
Okay, so the tail recursion is this cool thing in functional languages where you, in principle, you don't need loops in a functional language. You can implement loops with functions. You can't do that in JavaScript.
Aww.
Because in order to implement loops efficiently in a functional programming language, the language has to be tail recursive. And so this is one place where JavaScript is disappointing. More than a blemish, it's like, aww, I can't do pure functional stuff because it's not tail recursive. Which basically, all it means is, when you do the recursive call, when you call the function again, does it push it on the stack, or does it reuse it? If it's tail recursive, the recursive call is the last call of the function. If it's the last call of the function, there's nowhere to return to. It's saying that here, if we called box right here, then there's nothing more to do. There's no point in returning. You don't have to store anything on the stack. So you can save all that, you can reuse all that state. So that's how you loop, is you recursively call yourself at the end, and that's a loop, and you can just keep doing that. And then you just have a condition for deciding when you want to stop. So tail recursion is really good, because you can implement a loop, which are with function calls. Cool. But you can't do it in JavaScript, because if you do that, the stack keeps piling up, and it's going to blow up. So JavaScript is not a real functional programming language in that sense. It'd be cool if they fixed that. I don't really see why they can't, but yeah, it's weird compiler stuff.
Yes?
About the tail recursion, isn't it built on the function call stack
and it's an algorithm? So tail recursion, normally, you save the state of the function you're in, of where you are, you push it onto the stack,
yeah.
And then you call it, and then it returns.
Yeah, but if it's an operand, then it starts to see what that is.
No, but the tail recursion is an exception where it doesn't have to save the state. That's all it is about. I'm trying to show.
Like it's easy to do recursion, but if you just put on the last line, it doesn't necessarily mean
tail recursion. Oh, right. Yeah, okay, I see what you're saying. Yes, yes, you're right. If you have to figure out some... If you have to do some computation with the return results...
Well, there has to be
the,
no pending...
Then the
argument.
Yeah.
No pending operations.
Yeah, there have to be no pending operations, yeah. Exactly. We're not... JavaScript's not tail recursive, so I'm not going to go into detail, but just what I've been talking about functional stuff and people have been hearing functional, it's like, yeah. Not completely there.
So, for purposes of recursion, within the context of the DOM, it's probably safe unless you're doing something weird and abstract and potentially infinite.
Yes, exactly. So, it's not that you shouldn't use recursion in JavaScript, it's just you shouldn't use recursion as their substitute for loops. You should just use recursion for things that's natural, which is traversing trees. And it turns out JavaScript, you're a lot of times traversing trees because that's what your browser's storing, you know, all kinds of state about the web page. That's something I would like to talk about next is the structure of HTML and CSS and things, kind of just to talk about the script tags and all those, how they fit together. But, okay, questions? Well, I know you have many questions, but enough for this little piece. Okay?
Yeah, it actually took me like 2 guns a moment.